So I don't have to fear offending anybody here who's a member of a yacht club? Good, I didn't think I would. That's why I did this. So I'm sitting there across the bay. I live on 13th Street. I'm sitting on the sand one day reading. This is not too long ago, far in the distant past. And there's a huge celebration going on at the Lido Island Yacht Club across the bay from me. And they have this massive PA system. And it's their 75th anniversary. And they've got boats there and a parade and a fireboat and a helicopter and a cannon and a live orchestra that was miserable, by the way. You know, like, anyway, man. And they're giving out awards. You know, and I'm sitting there. They go on. I'm like, any minute they'll be done. Any minute they'll be done. I'm trying to read here. And,
and now the award for the best-looking car in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. With the Burlwood Dash Jaguar, Mr. and Mrs. Fred Fredrickson from Port Angeles, Washington, give a great...
You know, it's like, you get the little golf thing. And one of the awards was the Seaworthiness Award. A Seaworthiness Award. It's a very weird concept. What is seaworthiness? Anybody heard the term seaworthiness? Yes. What is seaworthiness? You've heard the term? You know it, right? Means your boat doesn't sink. Okay? Considering the Exxon Valdez, right? No, it just ran aground and spilled its guts out everywhere, right? Okay, it had to be rescued. Okay, how about the USS Arizona? Yep. It was made unseaworthy by someone else, correct? Okay, I hate to mention it. Okay. Touted as the most unsinkable vessel ever. So, was it a seaworthy boat? Until it sank, yeah, okay. You see the difficulty, right? Very seaworthy until it sank. So here's this award for seaworthiness. That's precisely it. How do they test it? We take it out, we run it into objects, we blow it up with bombs, and we see if it still floats. While I was in Hawaii last week, it was actually very tragic. 22-foot catamaran. This guy sails back and forth between Kauai and Oahu on a regular basis. 47-year-old fella. And they just find the boat out there in the middle of the channel. That was last Saturday. No guy. Just the boat. Never found him. They spent 3 days. Coast Guard cutters, helicopters, airplanes. Nothing. Apparently the vessel was seaworthy. Because it was still there. So what is seaworthiness? You know, how do they test it? Somehow seaworthiness is a measure of the conformity that a vessel has to accepted modes of approaching that chaotic mess called the ocean. There is a long tradition with boats about how you do it. Anybody here been on a boat? Good. How many of you have ever owned a boat? Good. Skippered a boat? Good. Okay. Those of you who have ever been on board a boat, a private boat? Anybody here private boat? Good. What happens when you get on board the boat? What does a skipper begin doing? It's laying down the law. And the first time you ask, so where's the bathroom? What does the skipper do? Convulses violently, yes. Don't call it that.
I've been calling it that all my life. What should I call it, the loo?
And he says, that's a head, right? And all the names change, right? There's a head. What are these parts called? You're inside the boat down below, which is not downstairs. And these things on the inside here, you would normally call them walls in a house. What are they called? Anybody know? Bulkheads go fore and aft. Okay, those are the ones that divide this way. You're facing the front, that would be the bow. Behind you is the stern. That would be the back. In between you and the bow are bulkheads. What's over here? The hull? Ceilings. These are the ceilings of the boat. Okay? It's designed just to make you frustrated. Okay? The little, what's this called? No, I'm not going to tell that one. Huh? The part up here? Because these are the ceilings, what's this? That's the overhead. Okay? If you're outside, what's it called? The doghouse. See? And that part, the flat part you walk on, is called the deck. Good. Except if it's inside. If it's inside, what's it called? No. Not unless you're on the Queen Mary. Then it's called a ballroom, actually, but you know. It's called a sole. So your boat's got to have sole, you see. And if you cut it, it's called fillet of sole. But anyway. Bad. Bad. But there are protocols for sailing. There's a certain way you're supposed to do everything. And that has, like, one of the easiest ways, by the way. See, I grew up on a boat. Literally lived on a boat. One of the easiest ways to tell who owns a boat and has never been on the water, or who actually has grown up with boats or knows anything about boat seaworthiness, is to walk down the dock and look at the cleats. Now, the cleats are those little horny-looking things that are sitting there. They're attached to the dock, and they've got the two parts, which are called bits. Now, the people who have never been on boats before, they tie up boats like this. You have maybe 20 feet of line, right? That would be rope. 20 feet of line. And they see these two big bits hanging out of the dock, and they decide they have to wrap it. So they wrap it. Kind of like a vacuum cord until all of the rope is gone. Maybe 30 wraps. So it looks like macrame. And you're thinking, what are you expecting? A hurricane. Because the boat, I mean, you know, tie a knot, why don't you? And people who've been there before, know anything about it, they go, one, two, over.
And then you just coil the rest of the stuff and lay it on the docks so they can trip over and fall in the water.
It's very, 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 very easy. There's a yachtsmanship award I heard as well. Yachtsmanship is the ability to conduct your vessel the way accepted protocols are. Here's some guys going out yesterday. I'm sitting on the same beach. These guys are backing out about a 46-foot catch, which would mean it has two poles sticking up, which are called masts. And the bigger one is forward, that would be in the front. And the littler one is aft, which would be toward the back. And just as they're about ready to pull out, the one guy goes, boop! Boop, 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 boop! And I thought, that's supposed to be three beeps. Because that's what you're supposed to do when you back out. You lay on the horn. Which means I'm backing out, get out of the way. But it's actually not called backing out, it's called backing down. Which is fairly difficult. You see how confusing it would be. But man, if you step on a boat, you better do it that way. Because these are time-tried traditions that will allow you to survive and not end up as an article in the Kauai Garden Island newspaper. I know, it's confusing for us too. It's really hard. See, and there is a particular disdain that comes over people, myself included, when someone does it the wrong way. You know, the irony is that there's also a disdain if someone does it absolutely the right way. And they're over it. You ever heard of, like, a Barney? You know what a Barney is? Anybody here a surfer from the 80s? Like a rookie. How does a Barney look? What does Barney look like? Mm-hmm. And when he goes to surf, what does he do? He pearls, and he comes out with a $1,000 board and a $5,000 wetsuit, and everything is perfect. And he talks the lingo, right? Musicians? How does one go about stringing a guitar? Is there a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it? I saw that movie, The Perfect Storm. I saw it for about 30 seconds. Because the 30 seconds that I happened to be near that was on video. I saw these guys standing on a dock, getting their boat ready. And the one guy pitched a duffel bag to the other guy. I'm like, that's not how you do it. Nobody ever pitches a duffel bag to anybody on a boat, especially if you're a lifelong fisherman. Why? It's when you throw things, they go overboard. You hand stuff always. This one guy, you know, he saw too many Old Spice commercials. We're all going to drown, you know, when they come back. Like, I can't watch this movie. If you have a Bible, please turn to Acts chapter 9. There is a certain kind of a comfort or a confidence that comes with knowing the right way to do something. Music theory. You have to play. You're doing blues, 1-4-5. 12 bars. Transitions like this. Anybody here dance? Ballet? Yeah. The right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. Anybody here ride horses? Yeah. Is there a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things? What happens when you don't know which way to do? Huh? You freeze up, huh? And you know that when you get on that horse and you don't do it the right way, everybody looks at you and says, that person's a greenhorn. That person's a landlubber. And it is the job of those who are the initiated and those who are the experienced to correct those who have failed. I'm sorry. That's a minor fifth. No, wrong one. You know what happens when you drop a piano down a mine shaft? You get A flat minor. Bad. Thank you, I appreciate that. That's good. Okay, Acts chapter 9. Now Saul, still breathing murderous threats against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, that if he should find any men or women who belonged to the way, he might bring them back to Jerusalem in chains. On his journey, as he was nearing Damascus, a light from the sky suddenly flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? He said, Who are you, sir? The reply came, I'm Jesus, whom you're persecuting. Now get up and go into the city, and you'll be told what you must do. The men who were traveling with him stood speechless, for they heard the voice but could see no one. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he couldn't see anything. So they led him by the hand and brought him to Damascus. For 3 days he was unable to see, and he neither ate nor drank. Why was Saul breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the followers of the way? These Jesus followers, Jesus worshipers. Why? Because he's a good Jew. He was unclear on the concept. And a good Jew, remember the story about Abiathar, right? There's these people, you know, violating the law in various creative and satisfying ways. And this one guy comes in, and there's the guy and the gal, and he just takes the spear and right to the ground. And because of that, all of his lineage gets to be high priest, yoo-hoo, for the rest of their lives. Zeal. Zeal for your house has consumed me. The right way to do things. Does Saul have precedent? Thou shalt worship no one other than the Lord your God. No man has seen God at any time. You can't look on the Lord. The Lord would never be a man. Does he have great biblical, scriptural precedent for what he's doing? Is he zealous for the Lord? Yeah. Does he honestly believe that he's doing the right thing? Yeah. He's serving the Lord. In fact, Jesus predicted that. He says, you know, there's going to come a time when people kill you and they think that they're doing God a service. He's doing the right thing. He's got great comfort and great zeal in knowing the should of his actions. Trouble is, he's wrong, isn't he? I'm amazed at how indignant we can be and still be wrong.
Righteously indignant. You know, there's a certain way of doing things.
Social protocols. Well, it's only etiquette and only polite to respond. You know, church is supposed to start on. When I leave a message for, I expect. I ask for. I've known that person for, they should at least. It's my birthday. Everybody knows that.
Righteously indignant and wrong.
Well, we've always done it the way it's accepted tradition, the way you do that. That's the way churches are supposed to operate. I'm supposed to get a phone call, at least marginally, sometime. I'm a member of this community, after all. If I don't show up for 6 or 7 weeks, they should call me.
I expect an answer.
Just a little bit of gratitude and a little bit of appreciation, because everybody knows you're supposed to get a thank you card at least twice a year if you're doing some sort of service. And
I should get a receipt for the money I give, and it should be on time. Everybody knows that. That's the way we do it in the United States.
Righteously indignant.
And the Lord says, now why are you giving me a hard way to go? Because it's me you're giving a hard way to go. It's me you're persecuting. Remember Jesus' story? When I was in prison, you didn't visit me. When I was blah, 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 blah. And he says what? Inasmuch as you have done it to the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Realize that the next time you are righteously indignant about the way somebody parents, about the way somebody drives, about the way somebody talks to you, calls you on the phone, doesn't call you on the phone, answers your email or letters, doesn't answer your email or letters, or whatever it is, you are righteously indignant against the Lord. Why do you persecute me? We tend to do that fairly frequently.
Sure, I'm glad I'm not that way. I'm indignant against those people who are.
So what does Jesus do? He knocks him off his donkey. I'd say the other word, but you might be indignant. Because it's not really a donkey, it's a mule. I'm glad I'm not reading the King James. Jesus corrects him. And the funny thing is, even though Jesus corrects him, he honors him and calls him to something absolutely new. I often wonder, what would have happened had Jesus just let him go on and do what he was doing? Who would Saul have ended up as?
Nobody. He would have been some nameless, righteous Pharisee in the middle of the first century, and nobody would know or care about. And ironically, God's correction of him is God's way of freeing him and honoring him. That God honors his zeal by not letting him sit there. And God corrects him.
He says, I've got something else for you. So what does he do? He blinds him, sends him to a guy named Ananias. Now, there was a disciple in Damascus named Ananias. And the Lord said to him in a vision, Ananias. And he answered, here I am, Lord, which is a good traditional answer. Right? Remember the whole Samuel thing? Samuel, Samuel. Here I am. Speak, Lord, your servant hears. The Lord said to him, get up, go to the street called Straight, and ask at the house of Judas for a man from Tarsus named Saul. he's there praying. And in a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias come in and lay his hands on him that he might receive his sight. But Ananias replied, Lord, that's not the way we do it here. But Ananias replied, Lord, I've heard from many sources about this man. You don't understand what evil things he's done to your saints in Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priest to imprison all who call upon your name. He says, no, Lord, you don't understand. This guy has a precedent of lying. He's pulled one over. He snookered you, God. Now I know better. You don't go pray. Don't you understand? He's just going to capture me.
It's like, Ananias, I have something for you to do.
You don't understand, God. It's wrong. This person is mean.
But the Lord said to him, Go, for this man is a chosen instrument of mine to carry my name before Gentiles, kings, and Israelites, and I will show him what he will have to suffer for my name. So Ananias went and entered the house, laying his hands on him. He said, Saul, my brother, the Lord has sent me, Jesus, who appeared to you on the way by which you came, that you may regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit. Immediately, things like scales fell from his eyes, and he regained his sight. He got up and was baptized. And when he had eaten, he recovered his strength. He stayed some days with the disciples in Damascus, and he began at once to proclaim Jesus in the synagogues that he's the Son of God. And all who heard him were astounded and said, Isn't this the guy who in Jerusalem ravaged those who call upon this name and came here expressly to take them back and change to the chief priest? But Saul grew all the stronger and confounded the Jews who lived in Damascus, proving that this is the Messiah. After a long time had passed, the Jews conspired to kill him. But their plot became known to Saul. Now they were keeping watch on the gates day and night so as to kill him. But his disciples took him one night and led him down through an opening in the wall, lowering him in a basket. When he arrived at Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he was a disciple. Then Barnabas took charge of him and brought him to the apostles, and he reported to them how on the way he had seen the Lord and that he had spoken him, and how in Damascus he had spoken out boldly in the name of Jesus. He moved about freely with them in Jerusalem and spoke out boldly in the name of the Lord. He also spoke and debated with the Hellenists, but they tried to kill him. When the brothers learned of this, they took him down to Caesarea and sent him on his way to Tarsus. So everybody knows the way it should be done. Saul knows the way it should be done, and God has to smite him in order to get through to him. Then Ananias knows the way it should be done, and God has to correct him. And then the disciples at Jerusalem know better, and God has to correct them by the mouth of a guy named Barnabas. One guy takes a chance, Barnabas. You know what Barnabas means? Son of encouragement. You son of encouragement. You son of consolation. I like this guy, Barnabas. Everybody else knows the way it should be done, and Barnabas goes, hey, it's the Lord. He does things like that. I find that we have... You ever had a gun pointed at you, by the way? When did you have a gun pointed at you?
Well, at the time, I thought it was a gun.
But it was really a pickle.
No, it wasn't a gun, but I was scared to know that it was a gun.
Yes. Yeah, you experienced it as a gun. Yeah. Yes.
One time, 20 years ago, in a shopping center in Santa Ana, actually, it started because one of the guys I was with, I guess, was trying to pick up on this guy's girlfriend. And so we went over, and there were some things that came, but we went over and talked. I don't know exactly, remember all the details, but he walked back to his trunk, or back to his car, with his trunk full of guns, held it to my head, and he said, bye.
He says, yeah, this is an exit sign. I was there that
Gloria
night.
And I, yeah, were you there?
Yeah.
Gloria and I were escaping out the parking lot because we thought the place next door was being robbed with gunpoint.
Which it had happened a couple of times.
And a cop thought we were the bad guys. And so in his yellow Costa Mesa
over the wall.
Thing,
came over the wall.
Praise the Jesus! I was like sitting next to the church secretary. Hi.
Hi.
Sure, don't shoot.
please don't shoot me by way of protecting me.
Right.
Yes.
John. Over here. John.
Yeah. Yeah. Informal parking. Big guy with a sign going, informal.
I had guns pulled on me twice, both by cops. One time at a marina, of all things. At a marina, there had been a murder on a boat. My family pulls in. My brother had been working on the boat the guy got killed on. My brother says, I'm gonna go take a look at that boat. I gotta check my varnish. He goes down there, walks, looks at it, comes back. Well, the boat was under surveillance. They see somebody go look at the boat. We drive out of the parking lot, cops. All around our family. We hear, what did he say?
I don't see anything to say.
Mom, roll your window down. We're in a 67 Chevy Malibu.
The guys are, they got the doors open, they got the guns out, like a half dozen of them.
The guy's saying, I said, put your hands over your head and exit the vehicle.
We're like, oh, yeah, right on. You know. About, maybe 10 months ago or so, I'm down at 13th Street where I study the Bible and pray. Late at night, where I pray. Because I live there. Standing there. Cop car pulls up. Lights. Get the I'm like, don't talk to me like that. I'm praying. Get your hands out of your pockets and over your head and get in the car. You're under arrest with a gun.
Like, would you mind explaining to me what this is all about?
We've had some robberies in the area. Am I carrying anything?
Just shut up and get in the car.
I'm like, okay, whatever. Pretty soon the sergeant rolls up. They take my driver's license out, and they realize I live a half block from there, four houses down.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ayers.
Sergeant's like, would you like to file a report?
I'm like, no, I just wanted him to put his gun away and stop pulling it on me. I want to walk in peace. Happens all the time. I get pulled over maybe every 4 or 5 days. Somebody comes up. One of the cops comes up.
What are you doing here?
I'm praying still, just like before. And every time there's this altercation because they're like, you're doing wrong. I'm like, no, I'm walking. There is not a law against being out at night and not watching TV. So, okay, over the course of years, I think I've developed a little attitude. Which makes me righteously indignant.
Forgive him, Lord.
Yeah. About 2 weeks ago, I'm walking down the LA, room-da-doom, going to my favorite beach. It's maybe midnight. Cop car pulls up. Spotlight on me. Now, this is the second time that had happened that week. One time, I sit in my car. I turn the car on. Car pulls up. Lights on it. I put my high beams on back. And... what are you doing? I said, I'm leaving, if you would get out of my way. He says, well, what are you doing? You're sitting in the car. Looks a little suspicious. I said, I have to sit in the car in order to turn the car on. I've been in the car maybe 30 seconds.
A little suspicious sitting in the car.
I can't do it from the roof. Now, if you're done, I would like to go.
All right, right. We've had burglaries in the area.
I'm like, they got to catch that burglar. I'm walking down the aisle, headlights on it. my retinas are ash. Guy walks up, And I'm like, you just violate my rights, I dare you. Arr, you know? And I know it's a law in Newport Beach, you have to carry ID. So he says, do you have any ID? First he says, do you have a flashlight on you? I said, do I look like I have a flashlight? He says, do you have any ID? So of course, I carry my old Golden West College ID card. Here. He goes, is this all you have? I said, it's ID, isn't it? And it has a photo. He says, yes, it's ID and it has a photo. Does the law require that I tell you, that I give you anything more? He says, no. I said, so what's this all about? I hear him going. Well, we've had a report of... says, what's your telephone number? I said, does the law require that I give you my telephone number? He says, no. I said, I'd prefer not to give it to you. He says, what's your address? I just live in the state of California right here. Does the law require more? No, it doesn't. I prefer not to give it to you. What do you do for a living? Does a, never mind. I'm like, I'm going, you're taking quite a bit of my time this evening. Another guy pulls up. Do you have a flashlight on you? No. I don't have a flashlight. I'm walking. There's not a law against walking, is there? And I'm righteously indignant up to here. The guy says, hey, we're not hassling you. First time a cop's ever said that to me. He goes, I just want to find out what's going on. I'm like, he says, calm, dude. You know, he says, we're not trying to give you a hard way to go. Don't mean to offend you. Don't mean to make you angry. Oh, I was the one who was supposed to do that. Soft answer turns away wrath. I know that verse, and you're a heathen. What are you doing? Question. Two questions, actually, maybe five. I'll get to them. One, how do you respond when you're corrected? Do you respond, yes, Lord, whatever, Lord? Or do you try to justify your position? I know which one I do normally. Two, how do you respond when someone violates something that you think is accepted protocol? With grace, with humility, with indignance. Third, what do you do when God has called someone else to something that rattles your cage? Do you stretch out your hand and say, right on, I'm behind you? Or do you criticize? Four, what do you do when God knocks you off your donkey and calls you to something absolutely that requires you to render judgment on everything you've done and throw your entire life away? Saul had a great reputation, a PhD in Jewish law. He's in with the high priest. He can go to the high priest and say, hey, give me papers, I'm going. The high priest doesn't. Do you say, yes, sir? Right away, sir. They go, Lord, you don't understand. The Lord's going to do some new things with us. There's going to be a new church. We don't know what's for sure going to happen. I'm sure it's going to bother all of us. We can't approach our relationships with how-to knowledge. Not in our marriages, not in our schooling, not as a church. We can't say, this is the way you do it, and this is the way you don't do it. But we can say, God, what? Talk to me, talk to us. Change us and teach us the humility that lets you do this.
and say, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Rather than, they don't know what they're doing. Your choice. My choice. Let's pray.
May the Lord bless you, keep you, cause his face to shine on you. May he be gracious unto you. May he grant you peace. May fulfill your heart's desire. May he sustain you. May he smile upon you. May he grant you the ability to relax and fill you with his joy. God's people said, amen.